Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Kevin Wooster joins us now. You can find his blog at sdpb.org/Wooster, and you can find him here with us every Thursday on In the Moment. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Lori. Good to be back.
Politics and Pask flowers. Which one do you want to start with?
Oh, what a combination. Let's get the bad stuff out of the way first.
All right, let's go to the politics. We you know, started this conversation just for maybe 30 seconds last week, and it's about Mike Huether, and he's currently the mayor of Sioux Falls. And as we put this map out in front of us of what some future political races could look like, his name's not quite on it yet, but worth considering. What do you know?
Well, you know, I decided finally that I'd been mentioning him periodically. People would say to me, you know, sometimes on Junkies, when I was on Political Junkies, well, who are we looking at for a possible Democrat? And it seemed like his name always came up along with Billy Sutton, you know, and lately Troy Hynert and some of those folks. And it occurred to me that I kept mentioning him, and I really didn't know him at all. Since I haven't been in Sioux Falls since 2002, except to visit, I've kind of missed the whole Huether era. So I know him a little bit through my brother and things like that, but I thought, as you know, one of the ways to get to know somebody is to interview him and to write something about him and then to discuss what you wrote with him, which I've done. So that's kind of been a process that I thought was valuable just in case he does run, although now it looks like it would not be as a Democrat.
Right. When did that change? He switched to
December,
independent.
Apparently. I was cruising along, finishing up my 2.5 months of hunting and fishing in my sabbatical retirement, whatever it was, and I noticed that. And, of course, my initial response, the thought was, well, of course, why would anybody want to be a Democrat in South Dakota right now and run for statewide office, which is a kind of a sad and perhaps unfair thing to say to some degree, but... Right. But I certainly think that's part of it. Now, he would argue that he's an independent-minded guy, and he got frustrated with the way the divisive nature of partisan politics and just decided he was better off as an independent. But the couple of people that I talk to that are political science professors and others see it as also a preparatory move to probably some kind of statewide campaign.
Right. How does that affect him, though, as far as a party backing him? Does that hurt him to not have the statewide Democrat, you know, machine behind him?
Well, that's the question. What kind of machine is it anymore? I don't know how much you lose there. You certainly fragmented already, diminished voter base, although the independent voter base is now over 100,000. I can't remember exactly where it is. And so it's grown, and some of that, frankly, is Democrats because they opened their primary to the independent voters a few years ago, which to me didn't make a lot of sense, but they were trying to engage the independents, and I understand the philosophy, but it probably just ended up with a lot of people or a certain number of people saying, you know, if I can vote in the independent or the Democratic primary as an independent, why not just be one? And also some of the growth is just because there's a more independent spirit right now. People are frustrated with both sides, and they're looking for a place to land, and the independent non-party is a place.
Do we have a background for this? Have there been other independents who have made run at a statewide office, or have we sent independents to Washington?
Well, we've had certainly Larry Presser, you know, made an impact on the last Senate race. But Larry Presser was a three-term U.S. senator as a Republican and a couple of terms as a House member, and was very popular at one time. So he had that name, and he had some issues that he could work on and things. And I think he got 17 or 18% in that election, which is a lot in South Dakota for an independent. Usually, if you get 3%, 4%, I think one of the recent independents got 5 or 6, and actually may have played a role in the defeat of Stephanie Hirst-Salin in 2010. But it's unusual in our state for an independent to go very far in a general election. But who knows? Maybe that's changing a little bit.
New era. So what did Mike Huether say about either what you had written or about his thoughts on what he's going to do next politically?
He made the sound that crickets make. No, actually, I made the sound, the literary sound in my story, which I might have overplayed that a little bit. But when I
For literary him, effect, we'll allow it, yeah.
I love the fact that when I asked him, he said, I think that's an incredibly fair comment and question. I really do. And then there was crickets. Yeah. And I said, well, that's great. I love it. But I really like it when you answer them. And he said, but I'm not running for anything right now. So then we played the cricket theme some more and kind of went back to that off and on throughout the thing, which of crickets kind of is a great transition into flowers, maybe, huh?
I think it is. I think it's time because if you're friends with Kevin Wooster on Facebook, he went out and laid down amongst the Pasque flowers this week, and people loved it. There are people who have so many connect. You just asked, who else has a connection with this? What are your stories? And the stories just poured out. Tell me about that.
They did, and as my wife always says, I'm a man with a healthy ego. I think that's a compliment, but she's, of course, I right away lay down next to the pass because I'm so excited to find it because it is early. We look for them up in the hiking trails above our house here in Central Rapid City near Skyline Drive, and when you find them, it's such a thrill, and it turns out to a lot of other people, you know, based on the Facebook flurry that came off of the couple of close-up pictures of Pasque and one with me with my swollen head lying next to it. It's such great anecdotes and memories. Everybody feels these flowers so deeply in recollection and really in their hearts and connects them with people. We've had people from all parts of the state that have moved to other areas or are still here that thought about particular Pasque colonies that they had in places and how their grandma loved them. A grandma from Ukraine, where they are a type of Pasque flower, loved them over here, and people that lost them to road development, people that don't spray certain pastures because they want to protect them, people that ran track and noticed them along the trail in the mid-1970s and now live in a place in California that doesn't have Pasques and miss them. It was just a wonderful social media encounter for me that, as I think I said on there, not all my social media encounters are quite so enjoyable.
But it kind of speaks, I think, to something else about how much, no matter what's happening in the headlines or what side of the aisle you fall on, everybody seems to connect over that thing that we have in common, which is a hope for spring and a little flower in South Dakota.
Yeah, and it's a hopeful little flower, you know, and it's one of the early bloomers. It sets its petals underground in the fall and prepares for the first moisture and the first warmth to get ready to go. It leads, according to a 1903 motto by the state legislature when it proclaimed the Pasque, our state flower. It also gave it a motto, it leads, and it does. Huh. And it brings us together in ways that we as a culture and a society really need to be brought together.
And how is it? Is it? It's related to the crocus that somebody mentioned planting them in Sioux Falls.
They are so hard to transplant, the wild ones. Yeah. Mary and I try that, and they don't make it. You know, they're very sensitive about that that kind of disruption of them their lives. You know, they're at a 10 or 12 or 13 year bloom or otherwise individual plants. They're very sturdy perennials. And there are some crocuses that we actually have. I'll be seeing them. I'm looking out my window here. I'll be seeing them in the front yard and the boulevard that'll be coming up yellow and purple. They are domesticated, similar to Pasque flowers, but not Pasque flowers, which are very difficult to take out of the wild and put in your yard.
Yeah. So I have a little crocus, a little straggler. It's been there since I moved in my house. I didn't put it there, and it comes up near this rock, and it's up, and the little neighbor girl came running over, and she said, "Oh, you've got a flower. Can I pick it?" And I just yelled at her. I feel so bad about it. I said, "No."
Mommy, the neighbor lady's mean.
I know, exactly. Afterwards, I was like, "Do you want a popsicle?" I felt really bad. But I just snapped. I absolutely don't. So even when you live in a city where, you know, you don't have access to that, it just becomes really, really important this time of year for whatever reason.
It does, yeah. And we've got access, obviously, the hiking trail up into what they call the Skyline Drive Wilderness, which is really a nature area. Obviously, it's not a wilderness in Middle Rapid City, but it's a beautiful area, and it's got some great, great Pasque flower colonies up there. And we'll be back up there many times in the next couple of weeks.
All right, describe a Pasque flower colony to me, because that sounds pretty impressive.
Well, it's possible I know what I'm talking about, but it's possible I don't. That's what I call them, and it's a cluster, and I think there's an interconnectedness there where you've got a lot of perennials, and they also reseed themselves, and so you'll get them finding these areas that work for them with the right types of soil and the right types of moisture levels, suddenly you'll have a little, I call it a colony. I don't think it's interconnected the way an aspen colony is, but it's they certainly seem to hang out together. And then you'll find a couple guys out on the edges, and I've got some of those guys in my friend base too. So, you know, there are colonies and loners, but the colonies are sometimes can just be stunning. And when you see them, part of the reason they're sometimes called prairie smoke is because, you know, they got this delicate little hairy, little gross, and they're beautiful when they're off at a distance. It looks like a little patch of smoke on the hillside. So very nice.
I'm wondering if you expected when you posted that to have the reaction that you did, because, you know, by the end, you're kind of crowdsourcing your blog. Everybody's writing it for you there. They're all inspired to participate actively in that conversation and the writing process.
They were, and my sister's a retired SDSU English professor who said she was so happy. She came on there and said, "I'm so happy you're writing about this." And I said, "Sis, my Facebook friends are writing about this. I'm kind of riding along right now." So I took their wonderful comments, and they were so heartfelt. And there's a range of people in there, that some of whom yell at me about politics, some of who, you know, are Democrats. Some I have a former Republican legislator, a conservative here in Rapid City, all just waxing poetic about the past flower. Then I called a guy, Dave Cody, who's a recently retired botanist for Game Fish and Parks and a wonderful plant man. And he's kind of the factual basis of this, although there's some pretty good facts in these anecdotes and stories by the Facebook friends, too.
All right. You can find the blog at sdpb.org/Wooster. Kevin, thanks so much for your time again this week.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again.